Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, this will be entirely focused on the defense and special teams performance from the Labor Day victory of Florida State over Ole Miss. Really impressive performance in the second half by the defense. Performance in the first half that made you scratch your head and at times wonder what the hell we'd done for the past 3 months. So interested to hear your thoughts and what you took away from a pretty mixed showing on Monday night.
Anger, for folks who listen to the offensive podcast, we talked about how Florida State maybe underestimated how much help Rick Leonard would need at right tackle and underestimated how much DeAndre Francois could perhaps do with certain elements of the game. I think in this game, Florida State had two critical overestimations, specifically for its defense. The first was, I think FSU actually gave a little bit too much credit to Ole Miss's excellent group of wide receivers and their passing game and their offense in general. That's a really talented offense, but hear me out on this. I think Florida State early on was so concerned with trying to trick Ole Miss and jump around and show a lot of different variations and looks and stem and flow and cloud and whatnot, that they didn't actually get lined up. They kind of forgot that basic element. And, you know, it's hard to simulate Ole Miss's tempo. And so when they're trying to do all this stuff, it's perhaps a little more complicated and involves more thinking and takes a little bit longer to get the play call in. They didn't leave enough time to consistently get lined up. And so at times they were totally out-leveraged on the edges, and that was a bad recipe against a very talented Ole Miss offense that lit them up for four touchdowns in the first half of the ballgame. That was, you know, was it 28-6 there before half, and then Florida State ultimately scored, cut it to 28-13. I thought that was kind of a critical overestimation, right? How much they could actually run against Ole Miss. Now, the other part that I think that they were sort of overestimating in, or perhaps underestimating if you want to take it from a personal standpoint, I think they underestimated just how well their guys could cover Ole Miss's receivers running their pretty normal pattern match zone stuff and their man-to-man defense. In the second half, we saw more of that. We saw Florida State say, okay, let's kind of shake up the globe here and reorder our priorities. Priority number one is absolutely get lined up. This should have been priority number one the whole time. And in fact, I think it probably was, but I believe it was reemphasized in the last 40 minutes of the ballgame because Florida State, I think, realized maybe their guys were overloaded a little bit with trying to do as much as they were trying to do. So getting lined up was the major thing. And just, hey, you're 4 and 5 stars almost exclusively in the secondary. Play like it. Cover these guys a little more. Play with confidence. You're ballers. You're badasses. Go do it. I think overestimation and underestimation really was kind of the tail of this game on defense.
Such a different impact that the defense has and what you get out of the defense from the point that they go up 28-6 and the performance you get from that point afterwards and what you talked about. And yeah, you do have some times where you don't get lined up, but you had so many mental mistakes, even when you did get lined up, that just blown coverages, and multiple situations where Chad Kelly didn't have one open receiver. He had two or three back-to-back mental mistakes on the first drive where you have Matt Thomas, who played pretty damn well, by the way, made a great touchdown-saving tackle on a guy where you just completely blow the coverage. Nobody anywhere near him.
And they were not lined up on that one, by the way.
Yeah, no, you're right. And then Derwin comes and picks up a personal foul. Just kind of indicative. And even the play immediately after that, they motion somebody open. And again, Florida State's confused. And before you know it, three plays has covered about 60 yards and they're in a first and goal type situation. So this podcast is never one where we're going to break down play after play after play, but that's an interesting and decent little synopsis and in a way pretty reflective of what you got out of the first half of the defense.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ingram, in order to be able to play fast, you have to be comfortable. And I just don't think Florida State's defense was comfortable playing fast with all they were trying to do. And so they really kind of did the keep it simple, stupid thing, right? And just let the athleticism and the comfort level take over. In the second half, they did a much better job of not turning guys loose and of getting lined up. Because the easiest play to make in football as an offense is a play where you realize pre-snap that the defense really isn't lined up right. And that tempo that Ole Miss runs at is really hard to defend when it's working. But when it's not working, it can be really, really detrimental to the team. And Ole Miss, Ingram, 58% of their runs on first down gained 1 yard or less. Now, early on, that didn't matter a whole bunch because Florida State was really trying to sell out to stop the run in order to, as we said on the preview podcast, take the option out of the spread option and just make Ole Miss one-dimensional. Later on in this game, though, when it became clear that Ole Miss could not run the football and they really weren't even interested in running the football, they were like a middle schooler playing Madden, just chucking it around every single play.
Four wide verticals, absolutely.
Yeah, just like, go deep.
That Madden playbook.
Florida State did something very interesting with DeMarcus Walker that I know you were a big fan of.
Absolutely. Move Walker down, allow him to match up one-on-one with a guard who really had no chance in hell and being able to block him, at least
badass guard.
At least in a at least in a pass rushing situation, and Ole Miss never felt the need to let him just block him in a running type situation, let him drive block a guy an undersized pass rushing specialist who just routinely embarrassed him. And that was very much a game changer. When you're able to move your defensive end down, get him lined up one-on-one on guard and let him play in a situation where he doesn't have any type of run responsibility, that's unless you've got members of the Cowboys offensive line from the mid-90s or something like that, that's a real tough ask of a college interior lineman.
If you're that guard, you got to want to just go and punch Hugh Freeze, right? Like Hugh Freeze, your total like imbalance in play calling makes me look like a huge jerk on national television.
Just run one dive play. Yeah. Just let me block this. Yeah, exactly. At least make him respect the idea that I might run block him.
I got to say, in watching the interviews with the old Ole Miss players and talking to some of the old Ole Miss media afterwards, I think they were very surprised with how physical Florida State's defense was for the majority of the game. Now, early on, I thought Florida State was a little bit tentative because they were playing slow and reserved and didn't look like they were matched up correctly. But, man, FSU brought the physicality. Even when they allowed a good play, they still hit and they punished Ole Miss. And I think that did start to add up over the course of the game, as did the ability for Florida State's defense to remain fresh because, as we profiled in the previous podcast discussing the offense, Ingram, Ole Miss did not have a drive that lasted more than 3 minutes. That was their longest drive of the night was 2 minutes and 32 seconds. So FSU's defense remained extremely fresh throughout the entire game. And I think that was a big key. Like, they were able to play their starters. Now, how many snaps do you think DeMarcus Walker played that night? 50 out of 63, probably? I mean, at least, huge percentage.
Yeah.
I think that's an undersold thing. Ole Miss had to dip into that defensive depth a lot, and Ole Miss's defensive depth is really poor. Florida State has good defensive depth, and they really didn't have to use it a whole lot. DeMarcus Walker, I mean, 4.5 sacks in a half? Good Lord.
Had some nice moments in the first half as well. Obviously nowhere near as impactful as what he was able to do in the second half, once he gets that initial sack and strip that is very much kind of the oh shit moment if you are an Ole Miss fan, as far as that lead we had just literally evaporated in front of our eyes 40 seconds into the second half. But Yeah, from that point on, Walker's the most impactful player on the field. I don't know if you want to call him the best player, but absolute dominant performance, and went a long way in getting him paid, and went a real long way in helping him to schedule a return trip to Orlando in late December, whenever it is the college football award ceremonies will be. A guy who looks to have some opportunities at Bednarik and Lombardi and some of the other postseason trophies.
That's a grown man playing against college kids. All right, now, the issues that I think the NFL thought he would have when he goes to the NFL are probably still there. In the NFL, he will be a grown man against grown men. In college, though, FSU's ability to get him singled up on some players who simply can't block him, I think that was great. I think that was a really good move that they did. And without recourse, because Ole Miss simply wasn't running the football. If you're an Ole Miss fan, you got to be not real happy with Hugh Freeze. You're an underdog. You get up 28-6. And the way that you manage the game from that point on out, and look, Florida State made big-time adjustments that you really couldn't do much about. Your own defensive game plan fell apart because I think you were very much relying on that corner who got hurt on the second series of the game to lock down Florida State's Travis Rudolph on an island, which I think he probably could have done because Rudolph's really more of a two than a one. But overall, I don't think Hugh Freeze managed the game all that well. And they just kept chucking it. And, man, I listened to Hugh Freeze on Paul Feinbaum, and he said, yeah, we didn't run the ball that well, but if we don't turn it over four times, we probably win the game fairly easily, right? And my thought was this. You want to just chuck it constantly against one of the most talented defenses in the nation? Good luck. Mm-hmm. Like, you think turnovers are not going to happen if you just throw the ball constantly against a defense loaded with four and five stars and as much length as Florida State has? You really? Like, that should be assumed. That it's almost like a sign like he doesn't get it. With that said, I will note, Florida State was lucky in this game to get as many turnovers as they did. Florida State recovered all four fumbles in this game, three of their own, and one by Ole Miss. Now, that's not all by the defense, but that's a big deal. We know that fumble recoveries are basically entirely luck. Now, forcing them is different, but they are luck. Now, Florida State also got three interceptions in this game out of only six passes defensed. I'm not a huge fan of the passes defense stat. I know that can be kind of shaky at times. Ole Miss had six passes defensed and no picks. So, yes, Florida State does have some latent turnover luck from this game. However, I would probably argue with the stats guys that if you try to just be totally one-dimensional against a defense of Florida State's talent, at some point this is not quite as much luck as you think it is, and it's really a predictable thing. Not to mention that Chad Kelly, you have to take the good with the bad with him. We saw how talented he is. I mean, he made some incredible throws for that Ole Miss defense, or for that Ole Miss offense. But he also did some very Chad Kelly-like stuff where the throw that Derwin picks off, mm-hmm. I think is a result of him being baited, and Derwin and, was it Marquez on the side there, or was it Lewis? I think it was Marquez. Derwin and Marquez do a great job switching that, you know? And Kelly just pretty clearly never sees Derwin James. The other one is, I think, a miscommunication between Kelly and his young receiver. The third one is a nice tip, a nice job of Marcus Lewis getting on a tip ball. That one's pretty lucky to be able to catch a ball off the hands of Ole Miss's superstar tight end. But two of those throws were really not very good throws. And that's going to happen with Chad Kelly. He also makes some incredible throws. Even the one where Matthew Thomas fails to carry the second vertical there and make the adjustment after it looks like Derwin James switches the coverage. He throws that ball over Thomas and to the right of Trey Marshall really nicely. He threw a couple of really nice back shoulder balls. Credit to Chad Kelly, man. He kept him in this game, and then he also took him out of it at some point.
Well said. Bud, you talked about Matt Thomas and what you got out of him. Give us just your impression of the first time we've been able to watch number six on the field in a long, long time.
Ingram, I think the main thing that we saw was effort. and energy. I mean, Thomas didn't play perfectly. He had a couple coverage mistakes. However, like you mentioned, he had a touchdown-saving tackle. He had a couple really nice plays in the open field where he chased down some runners. I thought he did a nice job filling the gaps later on. After early on, he was hesitant on one of them. Matthew Thomas looked like a player who, if he keeps improving and kind of getting his legs under him this year, can be an excellent linebacker for Florida State. I was very impressed with him.
Really impressed. Did a good job of tackling Kelly in the open field. Did a good job of not buying that dumb pump fake that way too many people buy. And Matthew Thomas, son, if that guy didn't read that throwback screen in a better manner than a Florida State linebacker has read that in the last 10 years or so, I can't remember who played it better. So now, of course, it was immediately negated. Naughty jumped off sides, and then they scored, I think, two plays after that. But the read that he makes on that throwback screen was one of the better plays of the evening. So Matthew Thomas, if that is your if that is you becoming acclimated back to the college game, then all the hype and some of the excitement that we had leading into the season appears to be pretty well justified.
I'm totally for it, man. I'm big time Matthew Thomas fan. Now the guy next to him, Roderick Hoskins, had some issues in coverage and looked kind of slow out there. Ended up leaving the game with an injury. I don't know what Thomas or what Hoskins' status is. We really haven't got to talk to Jimbo Fisher except one time since the game. Hopefully we'll get him Thursday, and I'll try to tweet out some updates on that. I tell you, I was very surprised with walk-on Nick Patty coming into the game, and I think Ole Miss was too, but they tried him immediately and found immediate success, and he looked very much like a walk-on.
Surprised in a manner in which you mean they immediately went after him, and they did.
Yeah, surprised like you walk home into your house and find a burglar, and you're like, oh, damn it, like, really? This is not good. Yeah, you got 8 scholarship linebackers, and you're playing a walk-on. I'm not sure what that's about. I can tell you that in practice, that has not been happening. He has not been the second team linebacker. So I don't know if everybody just had a terrible night on their pregame defensive assignment and coverage test or something or what. But that was not good. And they need to get some guys up to speed behind Roderick Hoskins and Matthew Thomas. And they need it to happen pretty quickly. Or they need to just play straight dime once once St. Andrews returns. You could play more dime stuff there and basically just dare teams to run on you, because you've got two really good run-stopping defensive ends up front in addition to Naughty and Christmas. By the way, we forgot to mention this in talking about the defensive line. Jacob Pugh is a very positive development for this team and a player that Jimbo Fisher really didn't talk about this fall camp, but he was not that good last year. And I think today in an interview with our Andrew Miller, he admitted that he was injured at times last year. But they need him, and we talked a lot this offseason about how they need that defensive end depth. Who's going to fill those spots? With Keith Bryant being out for the year with an injury, Jacob Pugh playing very well in this game, providing some energy and some spark, is certainly a positive development for this defensive line.
Yeah, good call, Bud. Pugh definitely raised his level of play. Good thing to see a guy who got a lot of meaningful playing time on the 2014 defense. Didn't play nearly to the level of maybe as expected last year, but strong first game for the 2015 season for him.
Ingram, as you know, the Nolecast is brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce. Louisiana Hot Sauce, a great tasting product. No carb, no fat, as they say, a drop will do you, but 2 drops won't kill your meal. It's got good heat, but it's not so insanely hot that it'll ruin it if you shake it a bunch. We've had a lot of members and listeners of our podcast text us and tweet us how they're using it. Great on chicken wings, great in the Bloody Mary. I know a lot of people like it on seafood. That's a great product, man. It's a great fit for the Nolecast because we're not big on the hot takes, but we're big on bringing the heat on the podcast. So very much appreciate Louisiana Hot Sauce for the sponsorship and the feedback that they have received from y'all tweeting at Nolecast and tweeting at the Louisiana Hot Sauce account has just been incredible. Very much appreciate that. So please continue to support our sponsors. That's how this podcast remains free and popular.
Bud, go ahead and move our attention to the defensive backs. McFadden, rough beginning of the game. Certainly the play that most people will look back on is Ole Miss's second touchdown, when really he plays and reads the fade about as well as you possibly can. Just doesn't go up for that ball quite as strong as maybe you'd hope for. Also, you have to give credit. The wide receiver made a hell of a play. But much better second half, ends up getting the final interception of the game, which kind of seals it. But all in all, pretty decent showing in his first game as a starter.
And the length, man. I mean, just the ability to control the run game on the edges with him and Marquez and Josh Sweat and DeMarcus Walker. People don't talk about corners playing the run a whole lot. And I thought McFadden had a very bad first 20 minutes of this game. Now, you're right. He could have played the fade a little bit better, but he's in general okay position. I thought him playing that slant there on the first touchdown, I thought he was a step slow and needs to aggressively close on that ball, right? That's you got to close faster than that. And he didn't. And I think he was just tentative. He was also tentative on a run on the very next drive. But something clicked for him. I don't know, maybe the last 30 minutes of the game, last 35 minutes. He started playing physical. He started playing aggressive. And I think that last interception was great for his confidence moving forward. That's a guy with great potential. That was big time. You didn't see him get beat by a whole lot of in-breaking routes, which was kind of the maybe the one concern that we had about him. Marcus Lewis, I thought, made a number of really nice plays in this game in coverage. He also got beat early on by being over-aggressive, which, Ingram, sounds familiar. That sounds like something we've said probably 4 or 5 times on this podcast previously.
Yeah, I agree, and it's also something that another member of the secondary may have in common with him, and I'm talking about Trey Marshall as well. But yeah, I thought Marcus Lewis had a nice little showing. Certainly made the nice collection of the ball after Ingram, Ole Miss's tight end, unable to bring that one pass in. Good for Lewis to get the interception as well. Decent showing. Some of the original busted coverages I thought might have been on Lewis again. That's almost irresponsible of me to say, because I don't have enough information to say that wholeheartedly. But again, another player who appeared to kind of grow as the game went along, and to an extent, that's more or less what you would expect and hope for two guys that were making their major college debuts.
Yeah, man, that was very, very, very impressive. By the way, I do want to talk about Derwin James real quick. Derwin James is incredible.
Confirmed. Yes.
Chris Lowe, the lead ESPN SEC writer, tweeted something like, by the way, all the hype about Derwin James being the best safety in the country is completely justified. That guy is ridiculous. And then Bruce Feldman tweeted that he was the closest thing that people have seen in the coaching business to who? Sean Taylor.
I had a feeling. I didn't read that, but Internet that fans is the name from Miami. That seems to be thrown around with Derwin quite frequently.
People want Derwin to make the coverage leap, and I think that through one game, which is admittedly not an okay sample set, he was better in coverage than he was for much of last year. And, man, that guy is so good. Just ridiculous. Derwin James is a total freak, and Florida State still gets him for a whole nother year because college football's archaic rules make it so that you can't go to the NFL until 3 years out of high school.
I mean, it's exciting to see Derwin. It's incredible to be able to have an opportunity to just to watch a guy like that and to know that he's going to be in the league. This is kind of taking us off track, but I was reading some pro football stuff a couple days ago, and they were previewing the top 25 rookies this year or something like that, and most of the guys in kind of their preview for 2016 had 5 or 6 sentences as to how they might work in or what might be asked of them. Jalen Ramsey's preview was literally, bud, Jalen Ramsey will be a Pro Bowler in 2016. I bring that up only as kind of a continuous conversation as to what we've had as to the incredible string of talent that you've seen in the secondary. And James is certainly the next iteration of that. And a guy who I completely agree with you, if it wasn't for some pretty backward rules, would otherwise probably be playing on Sundays next year.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Ingram, I would say overall, what grade would you give the defense?
Man, this is challenging. It's so hard to have a grade and not make too much of the first half or make too much of the second half. I'd probably give the defense probably somewhere around a strong 85, 86, a strong B.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe like an 82, 81. I feel like four first half touchdowns is too many to allow when you know you have a new quarterback you're breaking in. You can't put them in a hole that big, and I felt like that was something that they should have, especially the alignment stuff, should have been fixed earlier. The second half, they were obviously dominant. I mean, after Ole Miss's last first half touchdown, here's how their drives went. -1, -0, -4, -3, -6, 75, that was a touchdown. -1, and then 11. Included in that was 3 turnovers also. That's a really dominant stretch. The problem is, in the grade, this is kind of like the teacher was like, yeah, you aced the final, but you failed all four of your quizzes. 75, 24, 5, 75, 72, 80.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is a really poor start, and I think I grade the defense a little more harshly because it is a lot more veteran than the offense is. Well, at least because the offense's most important player is a redshirt freshman.
No, I think that's fair. In retrospect, it's probably a little bit too favorable of grade that I gave. But again, so you're comparing such different products as far as what you saw out of the two halves that it's hard to really merge those into one final reflection of their play.
I will note one thing. Ole Miss last year, Florida State held them to this game held them to 5.94 yards per play, which is generally the best thing, especially when facing a tempo team. You know, you have to look at the yards per play, because if you look at total yards, it gets skewed by how many plays they run and how many possessions they get. Do you know how many teams held them to under 6 yards of play last year?
I do not.
Only 3. Vandy, which does have a really nice defense, and Ole Miss was kind of sleepwalking in between the Bama and the UF games. 5.62. Florida, they had that total meltdown in the swamp, 4.49, which seems like it probably should be even less. And then Texas A&M, which has an interesting defense, 5.12. Everybody else, they put 6.66 on Alabama. They put 6.13 on Auburn. They put 8.94 on Arkansas, 6.65 on LSU, 7.69 on Oklahoma State, 7.15 on Mississippi State. We talked about how Ole Miss keeps that tempo up, and sometimes it can be good. But do credit Florida State for its adjustments in not just getting totally rolled out of this game. Because if that gets to be 35 or 42-6, then Florida State's not coming back.
Very fair. Bud, why don't we use this time to look back on some of the special teams play, in large part part of what allowed Florida State to kind of stay in that game, and a performance from a freshman kicker that would have been incredibly hard to predict, and probably a little bit of misrepresentation of maybe what the rest of his career will look like. But for Monday night, Roberto Aguayo, 6 for 6, Ricky Aguayo, sorry, 6 for 6, and as important as anybody on the field as far as continual momentum that Florida State gained in that process of coming back from the hole that they dug themselves in.
Absolutely agree. I do want to point out, of course, like you kind of mentioned there, sample set, especially when you talk about special teams and you're talking about, like, for a punter, only 3 punts, a kicker, 6 field goal attempts. That's just not enough to be statistically significant. and we'll know more about these guys throughout the rest of the season. However, some very quick observations. I'm going to read mine off. If you disagree with any, let me know. Logan Tyler's kickoffs were perfect. Like, they were really, really good, and Florida State covered them like bats out of hell. Ricky Aguayo, excuse me, pretty Ricky. Perfect again, 6 for 6. I did like the celebration where he was injecting himself. Personally, I thought that was a steroids fake injection to essentially give some hate to the haters who were saying he didn't have a big enough leg because he did it after one of his longer field goals. Other people thought that he was injecting ice into his veins. Regardless, I think it's going to be one of the best, albeit short-lived, because I'm pretty sure if she will tell him to knock that shit off, like almost immediately, right? Like, don't you think Jimbo's going to be like, wait, what? My freshman kicker did, like, shooting up drugs celebration on national TV? Yeah? I want Showtime to show that, the reaction Jimbo Fisher has when he sees what Aguayo did there. But, yeah, that was great that he was perfect on that. I got to tell you, talking to the beat writers who actually are at the practice every day, they were shocked. They're like, yeah, he routinely shanks like 30 and 40 yarders in practice, and we did not see that coming at all. Punt return was a bit of an adventure. I do not like Bobo Wilson back there. I don't think he's as good as catching the ball that Jimbo Fisher thinks he is. And the one decision to field the ball there on the bounce, I feel like we should get him like a one-game suspension for punt return anyway. You know, like that. Are you serious? You're a senior doing that? Like, thank God Calvin Bruton, who almost never gets to play, was heads up and hustling on that play and recovered the ball that bounced right to him.
Yeah, that's a decision-making process that will make you scratch your head. And well pointed out, that was a nice heady play by Bruton and a play that otherwise might be forgotten. That again, go back and watch this game. There's a series of small little things that that you think if it does happen, then yeah, you might, you know, that might have been a bridge too far for Florida State to come back. And that's one of those situations that lucky enough, Florida State didn't have to look at immediately turning the ball over after a stop on downs, or at least forcing them to kick.
I think punting was kind of iffy, and that Tyler was actually helped out by a couple nice bounces. So I would probably give him like a C on the punting. However, I will say Florida State, the punt return team, man, Florida State covered kicks and punts in this game tremendously well. Like what they, man, they did. They were all over the field. I thought they had good lane integrity. They did not allow any kind of nonsense. Nobody was playing undisciplined football. That was really nice to see. That helps you with field position. And then I thought the kickoff returns, Ingram, FSU actually returned a kick effectively. This is kind of a cool development. It seems like you can actually run the ball forward past the 20. When receiving a kick, this is neat. I want to see more.
It was
more
timely
of this.
Too. It was it was when you needed a return.
They blocked people in like a coordinated and organized fashion.
That they did, sir, and more importantly, they any hope that Ole Miss might have had, certainly that kick return didn't erase it. But anytime you get a score and then you turn around and give up a 40-yard plus return off the kickoff, it's got to take a little bit of the wind out of your sails.
Ingram, we got two sponsored segments we got to get to now. And the first is going to be Who's Hot, brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce. And that will be just me reading this off because it's a really cool stat, courtesy of our friend Brian Fermo of Football Outsiders. Did you know that Florida State has come back from double-digit deficits 16 times in the last decade, while it's only surrendered 4 double-digit leads in that time? That is by far the best ratio in the nation, an 80-20 clip. The next best team in the nation is only a 60-40 clip. So they're doing something right in Tallahassee about fighting for 4 quarters and playing hard. You could perhaps argue that they have put themselves in too many holes to come back that many times. But as one Miami writer today described it, Florida State has that whole zombie thing going on. We're able to, you just can't kill them. They lead the nation in the last 10 years in comeback wins of 10 points and 17 plus points as well, including one very important game where they finished off the comeback by throwing a ball to Kelvin Benjamin in the end zone against Auburn for the national title. And I do think that there is something to the mental mindset of this. Not that you won't have to tap this well too many times, but Fisher can legitimately say to these guys, we've done this before a lot of times. You've actually done this. We did this for the national title. We got this. Just keep punching. Just play the next play. We got enough talent. We'll come back. I thought that was pretty cool. So who's hot? Brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce. Florida State is, even when down.
Well done, sir.
The next sponsored segment, brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce, is going to be where I pepper you with some questions. All right?
Get please. It?
Pepper? All right. Oh, man. I feel like we have reached maximum capacity for hot sauce-related puns. Although, maybe I'll come up with a good one next week. Ingram, I have to ask you, after LSU's meltdown, how important is it that DeAndre Francois looked really good for Jimbo Fisher, especially considering that Malik Henry still remains suspended from practice?
Yeah, interesting train of thought, because damn if that LSU offense didn't look like it took some major strides over the summer like people expected. Yeah, I'm being pretty sarcastic right now. I don't know that Jimbo Fisher's complete decision to stay at a job would be made by who he has at quarterback. I think he's probably a guy who has enough confidence in himself that he would recruit well enough to be able to find somebody to play rather shortly in his system and be able to find some type of stopgap in a way like he did with Christian Ponder when he came here, an existing piece on the roster. But look, it's always helps when you have some really talented pieces on your existing roster. Ultimately, I don't think Jimbo Fisher would choose one job over another based on one particular or one individual player. I honestly think at this point I would be surprised to see him leave Florida State for the LSU job, and that's not necessarily dependent upon who he has at quarterback currently.
I think I'm in the similar mindset. I don't think he would necessarily stay for a kid absent like a Jameis, right? But I do think that if he thought the quarterback situation was especially bad at Florida State, right? Like, let's say that all of a sudden he realized, oh man, Francois can't play. Well, then you got a guy who's already been suspended before he ever played a damn game for you in Malik Henry, and you have two quarterback recruits coming in this year who are probably not early impact types. I think if he had a negative perception of the quarterback position at the job that he's currently at, it would make it easier for him to consider another job. Not that I think he's going to LSU, because I don't. And I don't really want to have to cover this topic every single week that LSU plays like trash. But I thought it was interesting just how well Francois played and Fisher being able to think, man, he's just such a student of history. He knows so much college football history. I think he does consider his place in history. And I think that he has to believe that he is going to have a chance to win a national title with DeAndre Francois, a quarterback who, by the way, is, you know what, 6'1", 200? Not exactly the type of measurements that typically leave early for the NFL. So there's a decent chance that if Francois stays healthy, that Fisher's going to get to coach him for like 50 games. You know, that's that's a big-time thing right there. I think Francois, I think I put a little bit more significance on it than you do, although I don't think either of us believe that Fisher's going to leave for LSU, especially not after how the boosters treated Les Miles last year, trying to force him out. I think that was a bad look.
Bad look indeed, and I just don't no reason for me to be repetitive and stumble over the same answer. I don't see LSU as a place that that he would leave for right now, particularly after what he's built here at Florida State. I think there will be a day in time, and perhaps that day is a little bit closer when people realize that a job on Sunday will call, and that is, in my opinion, much more likely to see him leave than to go back to Baton Rouge.
The NOLCast is also brought to you by Madison Social. The guys at Madison Social and that restaurant management group do a tremendous job. The best place in Tallahassee for food and drink. It's upscale pub grub. It's not your typical greasy spot, not your typical sports bar. Big time TV selection there. Great craft beer selection. Full liquor bar. They have it's like a chef type menu right there in the shadow of Duke Campbell Stadium in Collegetown. Matt and his crew have been longtime supporters of the NOLCast. In fact, I was able to stop by their Madison Social tailgate they had this weekend And man, we were right. The line for the bathrooms that we pitched on the last podcast of how the entrance fee to get into that tailgate would be worth it on bathrooms alone. I tweeted out a photo from the Nolcast account. The bathroom line for the public bathrooms was over 100 deep. And we counted it up at one point. Madison Social had 8 private bathrooms. Like I said, if you take a date to a game and she has to wait in the line, or if you have to wait yourself in the line of over 100 people to use a porta potty, that ain't a great day. Pay the money, go to the Madison Social private tailgate. Had a blast, great selection of craft beers from Proof Craft Beer, and got to chat with Matt a little bit. Always a great time. Might be adding a special Nolcast Bloody Mary to the menu featuring Louisiana hot sauce. So look at us combining some brands with some synergy here.
Yeah. Ingram had been thinking about that for a while, I can promise you.
But that's true. I did steal your idea and pitch it. So so anyway, we very much appreciate Matt and those guys sponsoring the podcast. And they know our listenership loves them and keeps giving them great feedback as well on social media. So thanks again. All right, Ingram, ready for me to pepper you with another question here, brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce?
More peppers, please.
All right. Did you watch the Showtime A Season With show?
But I suffered some technical difficulties last night and was unable to watch A Season With. How much of that show do you think was kind of a byproduct of reality TV?
A lot. A whole lot. They didn't mention Vic Filoria's DUI. They didn't mention Malik Henry's suspension. They didn't mention Kareem R. being out with a concussion at all. And I think, just after talking to people that have been involved in reality TV, that there's a decent portion of that show, in my opinion, I can't prove this, that's probably staged, right? Like, I would say many of the meetings had at Jimbo Fisher's office are probably not like that, right? Like, they probably discussed what they were going to say beforehand and then said it. And I'm also not entirely sure that the little skirmish between Derwin and Bobo wasn't planned out. Like, there is no way in hell that if I'm Bobo, I'm going to go pick a fight with Derwin James. That is the least desirable player to fight in the secondary. Don't you think? As like a 5'9 receiver?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be testing Derwin James anytime soon. I wouldn't. Yeah, that's interesting, though. I mean, some of the meetings, some of the stuff that I talked about with people, I got a similar feedback. I think, obviously, I think Jimbo Fisher's pretty familiar with when the camera's on him and when he's not. And he's
like that pregame speech, which seemed to last like an hour.
Man, that was straight out of Bobby Bowden. Bobby Bowden used to give some pregame speeches where he would address like every possible aspect, like, okay, offensive line, I need you to block good and get in good stance, offensive line. And that was almost reminiscent of the Bobby Bowden pregame speech where he would touch on damn near every aspect of football before you'd go out there. So
it was one of the worst pregame speeches I've ever heard Jimbo Fisher give. It seemed totally for the cameras, right? Mm-hmm. I thought Hugh Freeze's speech, to the extent we got to see it before the game, was much better. And I usually think Fisher's pretty damn good at the pregame speech game. So that was interesting. I wonder if maybe he'll just get that one out of the way and then get back to doing what he normally does after game one's over.
It was lacking. It was lacking. I agree.
In what area? I feel like it was like he double covered every damn possible subject.
Always appreciate it. Good to be able to look back after the first game. Not going to learn a whole lot from this Charleston Southern over the weekend. And in general, kind of a disappointing week two from what college football has to offer. But we will be back shortly and previewing one of the more important games and one of the more difficult games that can be found on Florida State's schedule, and that is a noon visit to Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes, not the Kentucky that blew a
Not Stoops, Coach Kentucky.
Yeah, he's going to get fired. Two things real quickly. Number one, those of you who said hello to me at the Florida State game, thank you very much. Always appreciate y'all listening to us. Those of you who have not given the 5-star review yet, but promised me that you would do so when I reminded you about it in person, if you happen to be really housed, I'm going to remind you again, hopefully you're a little more sober listening to this, especially if you're commuting to work. Please make sure to give us 5 stars on iTunes. That's how we stay ahead of other lame podcasts who think they're great, but we know we're better. So keep backing us up as the number one FSU podcast out there. And have a good night. I got a daughter to feed, and $200 ain't enough to water the seed. It's too much to swallow, not enough to dry out the screen. That's the sound of the street. That's all I hear every night while I dream. Thinking I wake up out of the dream. From $200 on some brighter, not a degree. Since every day is Christmas to light up the trees. What you got up your sleeve? What you drinking? You got it from me. Baby, 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 baby. Niggas is back on the slave trade today. All I'm trying to do is make